In 1 Corinthians chapter 8, you would note that which you are familiar with, 1 Corinthians 8. And may I go directly, if I can, to verse 2. And if any man think that he knoweth anything, he knoweth nothing yet as he ought to know. And so here the knowing that we don't know enables us to be knowing what we need to know, and we need to know that we don't know enough apart from God's grace and mercy, and we don't know enough to be saved unless we understand that God is always, always necessary. You cannot exclude God. Not in his creation. You can't do it. God must be included. Now, having said that, Matthew chapter 16. Just keeping up front, fresh in our mind, that if we say we know, we really only know a little bit. First, Matthew chapter 16, verse 24. Then said Jesus unto his disciples, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. So there has to be a putting aside of one's personal anything and going in not our direction, but in God's direction as he would direct us. Verse 25. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever shall lose his life for my sake shall find it. So we're keeping in mind, we know that we don't know, and we know that God knows what is necessary to know. And that's very important, because we can't exclude God. We also know that if we don't follow him, then we will not be going in the right direction, and will not be knowing. Verse 25, if we understand that it is better to find God, and everything else comes with it. Verse 26, for what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? And what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? So having everything apart from God is to have nothing at all, nothing. So without God, there's nothing. With God, you have everything. But without God, you have nothing. Now, having said that, let me add the piece. 1 Peter if I may, in chapter 1. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 23. Being born again, not of corruptible seed, but of incorruptible, by the word of God, which liveth and abideth forever. For all flesh is as grass, and all the glory of man as the flower of grass. The grass withereth, and the flower thereof falleth away. But the word of the Lord endureth forever, and this is the word which by the gospel, the good news, is preached unto you. So we know that apart from God, our efforts, energies, exercises, apart from God, leave us with nothing. We are as a piece of grass. Doesn't leave us much. We have everything. Without God, we got nothing. We in ourselves are but grass apart from God, here for a moment, temporary. Would you go with me now to 1 John, right next door? 1 John, chapter 2. And if I may, in verse 17. The world passes away, and the lust thereof, the wanting, needing, to have something, the lust thereof. But he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. So here's the human heart, And if we're going to go and pursue the world system, then it's going to disappear. And we won't have it. We'll have our hand on it, holding it, and then it's gone. Another way to say that, just think of holding everything and then reminding yourself that in a moment of time you brought nothing in and you what? You take nothing out. So everything's in your hand and then nothing's in your hand at all. You have, but you don't have anything. He that doeth the will of God abideth forever. Now, having said that, let me just give you three thoughts along that line. And keep in mind now, the God of this world hath, 2 Corinthians 4:3-4, the God of this world hath what? Blinded the mind of them that don't believe. So the minute there is unbelief, you lose your eyesight. I don't believe. You're blind. So you're trying to see still? You're still trying to see? But you can't. You can't do it. Unbelief blinds the mind. Now, keeping that in the light of what we just did, keeping that in mind, A, number one, that we, in order to handle life, and as we live it, as we experience it, we have to have hope, and people have expectancy, hope about things. They hope to retire in X days, years. They hope next week thus and thus will happen. They hope the medicine will work. They hope. And we live like that, right? That's how people live, with hope. They have hope, expectancy, and that's how we carry on from week to week. Our hope could crash, but then we get a new expectancy and we drive ourselves onward. And we live like, people live like that. Secondly, we have a system. We have a system, a thoughtful system, whereby we attribute to a foundation that allows us to stand on something. People stand on a philosophical system. They stand on a religious system and a system of whatever their religion belief is, and they stand on that and they rest on that and they retreat to that. They retreat to that when push comes to shove. They run to that as a basis to protect themselves. And they have that. So, A, we have a hope. We keep renewing our hope and whatever to keep us going. And, B, we go and have various systems of escape, relief to rest upon. We do that. And that's how we handle the realities of life. We have a religious thinking, Islamic thinking, whatever it is. And thirdly, there is the just plain old, often exhibited in our day, exhibited an indifference, a careless indifference, a carelessness, an indifference about anything, about work, responsibility, home, family, indifference. And here and now, whatever I can get, however I do, drugs, drink, whatever it is. And we have an indifference to our hearing, the music plays away. We have indifference to our lungs, and we take it in. An indifference to our mind, we take it in. We just lose it all. Indifferent. Now, those are three things. You probably can think of more. Why? How do we handle living? Now, with that in mind, back over, if you would, and over... while we're here in the New Testament still, go to Timothy. And in 1 Timothy chapter 6, let me add another piece. Verse 17, charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in living God, who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. So here's a world, God put us in the middle of the world. God put us in the middle of the world with all the things in the world, even with the effect of sin. We're to be in the world and to be able to, as we shared last time, to exercise our taste buds, to have all kinds of different things, taste, experiences, to be in the world, to enjoy living. But you can't do it apart from God. Now, having said that, we're ready to go back to the book of Ecclesiastes. And in Ecclesiastes, if you would, chapter 1. Now remember now, Solomon is a Jew, a Hebrew. And all Hebrews, the Hebrew thought life, because God took them, and by way of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, their whole existence as a people, Israel, would be God-centered. So everything commences with God, begins with God. In the beginning, God. So we always start with God. That's so we can work things out. Everything's here on earth. Here we are. Here's everything around us. Here's all the realities of life. And there's God. So God, we're looking to God to be able to handle all the things that we are and that are about us. And we're looking to God to do that. So trusting God like that, looking to God, they can handle. They don't wonder. They wouldn't think of evolution or some other thing. They don't have to wonder. And they didn't. They didn't. That's why you don't find it. What is the origin of thus and thus? They don't do that. They don't do that. Why not? Because God is the origin. So we start with God. So now the Greek Gentile mind, remember we share together, doesn't have God. So the unsaved Gentile mind, if you would, seeks to handle life, and they're born on planet Earth, and they explore their environment in the home or wherever it is, and they explore their growing environment, and the world all around them that's grown up is seeking to understand and relate to realities by hope, having a bit of hope, having a bit of indifference so that we can don't care about anything, having something to retreat to religiously or philosophically so that we can claim that as a safety net for us. And we do that. So here's the Gentile world, and they're trying to get origin. That's why evolution does what it does. Why? Because they're trying to figure out, where do we come from? They're trying to answer everything. And they don't answer it well. And so society, our society, along with others, keeps legislating. And if we can't solve the problem, we approve it. We don't punish, we don't fix, and we don't know how to handle it. So all we can do is say it's all right. And you have that in morally in our country, etc. It's just going, and the only thing we can do, we can't solve it. And you make all the noise they do. On the one hand, watch this and watch that. That's bad. This is, you got to, someone persecute or get someone for that. On the other hand, they're commending everything that makes all the problems. So it's a battle, it's a losing battle. You're pouring water into a cup with no bottom. And you say, I need more water, more water, more money, more water, more money, more money. For what? What does it do? It doesn't do anything. So the world's busy trying to find itself an answer life's realities. And the life's realities keep changing. And if you lived in the days of Genghis Khan, that's one kind of day. If you lived in the day of Alexander the Great, that's another kind of day. And if you live today, you have another kind of day. And we're trying to handle what happens. We're trying to handle nuclear and handle this and handle that. And we're trying to work with it. But we have no relationship to God, who said, if you put me in the right place, everything else is in order. If you leave me out, it's all out of order. Now, having said that and keeping that up in the front of your thinking and remembering God has given everything to enjoy and all of that, but you can't do it apart from God. It won't work apart from God. So here we are in Ecclesiastes. In Ecclesiastes chapter 1, just to remind you, Ecclesiastes, remember Solomon now? We'll hit it. Ecclesiastes is a Greek word for a Hebrew word, a Koheleth. And that means the one who addresses an assembly or an official speaker in an assembly. And the rabbi would translate it, one who collects, assembles, and expounds among the rabbi. One who collects, assembles, and expounds among the rabbi. Rabbis. Now, in the law, the word, so Ecclesiastes, it's a book. It's a wonderful, wonderful exposition by the man who is most qualified to do it. And thus you'll notice in verse 1, the words of the preacher, the son of David, the king of Jerusalem, going over to verse 12, I, the preacher, was king over Jerusalem, over Israel in Jerusalem. And in chapter 7, if I may, verse 27, behold, this have I found, saith the preacher, counting one by one to find out the account. And preacher, the one who is the leader of an assembly, who is expounding, clarifying, correct, making, putting it all together for us. God has raised up a man, Solomon, who, as we shared, has given him wisdom as no other was ever given wisdom like him. And that had nothing to do with his being saved. It had to do with God giving him that gift. And God gave him that. So here's Solomon. Solomon has a but he didn't have to go to the library. He just didn't have to go to the library. You know, what do you want to talk about? And wow, Solomon, I got to tell you. Now, so God raised up a man to say something. What are you going to say? I'm going to use this man in a number of ways. And in using him, I want you to know one of the ways I'm going to use him, I should say, is to help people understand that apart from God, you have nothing. No matter what you have, no matter who you are, you're just as a blade of grass. And everything that you could ever have, touched, taste, smell, is nothing. Is nothing. Now, so here's Solomon going to write. He's writing as a Hebrew. He's not writing as a Gentile. Trying to find God, he's telling you that if you try to go, as we read in Matthew 16, if you try to go and have all of the world and you could put it all in your pocket and you would own it all and have a jet plane to fly you all over the world to your possessions, if you could do all of that, you have nothing at all. Nothing at all. You have nothing still. So, Solomon, what are you going to tell us? I'm going to tell you about a man who had everything. He lacked nothing. And he's going to educate you on this wonderful truth that without God, you've got nothing. He's going to educate the heart. And if we don't go with hope, looking hope for this and hope for that, that makes us last another week, another day, we'll feel a little better next week. Things will be a little better next year. And we hope this way, and we keep doing that, hoping. And we keep doing that. And secondly, we go and have a retreat to some religious, philosophical place that we can say, this is what we're trusting in, this is what we're looking to. Or we're totally indifferent, carelessly indifferent to anything, anywhere, anyhow, was sort of in a dreamland. Now, how do you approach that, Sullivan? Life is absolutely a tragedy apart from God. And no one can afford to look at life, reality, apart from God. Unless you play the hopeful game, play a religious game, play an indifferent game. That's the only way you can do it. Because nothing comes out. Nothing will ever work. Nothing is ever resolved. Now, having said that, in Ecclesiastes, again, would you please note, he is king in Jerusalem, if you would. And he is the preacher, the one who is expounding, collecting the truth, teaching us, is king in Jerusalem. And I remind you that he's king. And like James, the servant, the woman, the widow, the preacher, the king. He's the king. He's king of Israel. I want you to know he's the only king of Israel. Because after him, there is no king of Israel. Israel is divided. 10 tribes, 2 tribes. He's the only king. So there's only one king you're going to look for, and that's Solomon. Solomon is the king. He's the last king of Israel as a nation before division takes place. Now, having said that, and keeping that in mind, remember Solomon? Solomon had discovered his folly. He was very, very, very knowledgeable about everything and anything. And therefore, he could investigate, he could try, he could dream, he could think, he could follow lines of thought that the average person would never dream of. Just think of being a physicist. Think of being a biologist, a zoologist, whatever. And you pursue, the average one of us just see a bug. But that person sees the bug and he can go deep and deep and deep, right? And they can go deep and deep into something else. Well, Solomon could go deep in everything. So Solomon searches out everything and he has an immense capacity to go in every direction. And so here is Solomon. Solomon has said, going to be, God allows him. Why couldn't Solomon, and Solomon isn't like David. He didn't have a heart for God like David did. But God had a purpose for Solomon. And Solomon comes across, his thinking isn't right, his actions are wrong. But he's able to tell us, as he puts it together, as he puts it all together, it just isn't going to work without God. And thus he exercises his mind, his money, his talent, his ability, his power, his position, his possessions. He exercises them something fierce. And he does that to great extent, overextending himself in building and everything. And he does that to help us. Would you go with me to 2 Chronicles now before I go back here? 2 Chronicles chapter 9. And 2 Chronicles and chapter 9. And you would just want to keep, you won't appreciate, you don't want to just think Ecclesiastes is just a book. It's a special book for very special reasons. And if you take advantage of it, you become highly educated about life. If you don't, then you'll do what the Gentiles do. Trying to work every day out and hope and be indifferent to that which you don't want to think about. Here is 2 Chronicles, if you would, chapter 9. May I go, please, to verse 13. Now the weight of gold that came to Solomon in 1 year was 603 talents of gold, 666 talents of gold, or approximately 25 tons of gold, or 50,000 pounds of gold a year. Now, how's that for your treasury? Pretty good. Isn't even in the gold business. Isn't in the gold business. It just comes to him. So that's a lot. That's a lot. I mean, it's more than most of us have. Verse 17. Moreover, the king made a great throne of ivory and overlaid it with pure gold. Why not? Verse 18. And there were six steps of the throne, a footstool of gold, and they were fastened to the throne, and stays on each side of the sitting place, and two lions standing by the stays. I'm impressed already, imagining this, looking at it. And 12 lions stood there on the one side, and the other, and the other upon the six steps, and there was not the like made in any kingdom. And all the drinking vessels of King Solomon were of gold, and all the vessels of the house of the forest of Lebanon were of pure gold. None were of silver, puny silver. It was not anything accounted of in the days of Solomon, for the king's ships went to Tarshish with the servants of Huram. Every 3 years once came the ships of Tarshish, bringing gold and silver and ivory, apes and peacocks. Man, he just had. What didn't he have? If for the man who has everything, what do you get him? You get him a giraffe. I mean, what are you going to get him? He has everything. He has everything there is. So you try to think, well, what can I get him? But he doesn't have, you see. Chapter 9, verse 22. And King Solomon passed all the kings of the earth in riches and wisdom. There was no one like him. And all the kings, verse 23, of the earth sought intensively with great activity. They sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom that God had put in his heart. So not only did he excel everybody in everything, he had everything, no one had it, in all the kings of the earth. And his wisdom was so well known, obviously it would be, that they came. They came to hear him. So when you come now to chapter 9, verse 7, chapter 9, verse 7, and remember now here, if we can, Solomon is going to be looked at, examined, and I'm going to pick up in verse 7, the Queen of Sheba coming all the way down, just think of the Sinai Peninsula coming down, and way down there, she comes way up there to see him. Now, verse 7, happy are thy men, and happy are these thy servants, which stand continually before thee and hear thy wisdom. It's an awesome thing to be in your presence as anybody, a servant, a floor washer, to be in your presence to hear your wisdom. Wow. If I may, verse 8, blessed be the Lord thy God, which delighteth in thee to set thee on his throne, to be king for the Lord thy God, because thy God loved Israel to establish them forever. Therefore made he thee king over them to judge in justice. And so here they're having to acknowledge God. Solomon acknowledged God. He didn't have a problem. He's a Hebrew. He didn't have a problem with God. But he didn't look to God, as we started out in Sunday school. He didn't look to God. He looked around, and he was caught up in that. Understandably, he could do everything and have everything. So therefore, there was an endless journey, day in and day out, of something new. And whatever you had yesterday, you want something new tomorrow. You had a building, and then you want a bigger building. And then you have a bigger building, and you want a bigger building. And you want a gold building and a gold and silver building, and you just keep going. Solomon, you have everything. And the Queen of Sheba said, what are we going to give to the man who has everything to satisfy his soul? And the personal message when it's all done, to avoid losing out, to share and to spare those in the world who would read and pay attention. A book of Ecclesiastes is thus written. Learn something about reality. the world is busy trying to find and work out on a daily basis their coming and going. Learn something about the whole process or you'll lose. Job, home, work, school, you'd be a wasted time, a wasted life, nothing at all without God. And now he's going to illustrate that. Now, back over, if you would, to Ecclesiastes. And the credentials of Solomon to do what he's doing and say what he says are impeccable. The world itself, unsaved world, acknowledges him. The unsaved world acknowledges him. Now, Ecclesiastes again. Remember in mind the whole point here. In the process to the living, it points to the living and living out of one's life, existence. And I shared for the third or fourth, fifth time, you don't want to do that apart from God's saving grace. If you leave God out, you're going to find sin, sorrow, and suffering. You're going to find guile and guilt and vainglory. You're going to find cruelty and crime and crippling criticism. You're going to find disappointment, discouragement, and despair. If you leave God out, you are going to find these things. Therefore, secondly, you want to confess the sin of thinking to find out, to fulfill one's existence in time by the things in time. If we just have the things in time and have more things, we attach ourselves to, if we can just have more of them, then we'll belong in time, because see how much we have, see where we're at, position, power, place, see where we're at, we have a place in time, except we're going to be as grass and disappear out of it. So that didn't accomplish much, but at the time we don't want to think of those things. And therefore, thirdly, we want to remember that in Ecclesiastes, we're looking for the purpose of exposing the realities of life so that we handle them properly. And hold your finger here just a moment. Let me add to that the Gospel of Luke, chapter 12. The Gospel of Luke in chapter 12. And you'll notice, please, in Luke 12, may I pick up the verse 19, well, verse 18, remember? I'll read verse 17. And he thought within himself, this is the rich fellow, what shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? And he said, this will I do, I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, so thou hast much goods laid up for many years. That's hope, having hope. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then, whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? Who's going to take over your house, your car, your money? Who's going to have it? You're going to leave it in a second, and your bills. You're going to leave him in a second of time. Wow. Now, back over to Ecclesiastes. All of this is to goad the human heart. And go to Ecclesiastes, the last chapter, 12. Chapter 12. What is he going to do? Your purpose is to help you understand you can't do it without God. It's just, leave God out, you got a big zero. Family, friends, job, home, wealth, health. You got one big zero. And you have a whole world of people living a life just like they want to live it. And they're trying to handle life and the realities of life. And they're going to end up with a big zero. So if you try to copy them, mimic them, majority is always wrong. Majority is always wrong. So if you don't want to go with the majority, that's what the crowd, don't do it. Don't do it. Thus, Ecclesiastes 12, verse 11, the words of the wise are as goads and as nails fastened by the masters of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd. God said, I want you to know, the book of Ecclesiastes, this wonderful, wonderful experience of looking at the world in which you live. They are as goads to prick, to stimulate the heart and mind, to think, to awaken it. They are as nails to permanently lock on to the written word of God so that you pay attention to what it says. Now, back over to chapter 1 again, if I can. Verse 2. Remember, the theme of the book of Ecclesiastes is vainness, profitlessness. Everything is vanity. Verse 2. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And it's used 40 times. 40 times. Little book, 12 chapters. Vanity, 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 vanity. And in the process, it is repeated, repeated, repeated. And just to go to the end, so you can see it, chapter 12. Chapter 12 and verse 8, so you have the beginning and the ending here. And chapter 12, verse 8, vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, all is vanity. Vanity. Now, back over, if you would, to chapter 1, verse 2. The word vanity means breath, vapor. Nothingness that passes away. Something passes away very quickly. To breathe out the air, to inhale, to exhale, it's all gone. Did you ever notice that? You've done it many times since you've been sitting here, and you haven't saved one of them. They disappeared, didn't they? You had no idea that you just exhaled and inhaled over and over again, it's all gone. That's the word vanity. You say, what's vanity? Just like you have no remembrance, of no use, there's no value to you. The breath that you breathed a moment ago is no value. It's worthless. Just like your Vanity. You understand? Vanity. Okay. Vanity. Transitory. And in chapter 6, Ecclesiastes chapter 6, again, speaking of being born, etc., he cometh, verse 4, 6-4, he cometh in with vanity, remember, like the breath, and departeth in darkness, and his name shall be covered with darkness, and it's all gone. Think of all of the millions and millions and millions and millions of people that are all gone. And apart from Who's Who, or a cyclopedia, a stone, a street name, no one knows any of them. No one cares about any of them, do they? Let me make you say you care. Well, listen, you have a phone book, do you? Do you have a Hartford phone book? Tell me how many names in that directory that you are concerned for, actually, that you're capable of being concerned for. That's in a directory, let alone in the humans of the earth. Vanity. Trying to get it across. It's vanity. Say, well, no, it's meaningful, it's necessary, imperative. It's vanity. And God is trying to help us, by way of Ecclesiastes, to get a handle on it. And I would remind you that it would be used elsewhere. All idols, all religious activity created in and out of the heart, a substitute for the word of God and the truth of God and the God of truth, is vanity, Deuteronomy 32. All vanity. But we give ourselves, we burn, we Buddhists will be burned for themselves. The Islamic will suicide themselves in the name of whatever. Vanity. All of it is vanity, emptiness, no profit at all. Now, having said that, chapter 1, Ecclesiastes, and you would note, please, chapter 1, and may pick up in verse 2 again. All, everything repeats, all is vanity, and that's the challenge, the question. Verse 3, here's the question. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? That's the question you're going to answer. In the light of everything is as a breath. Now, what profit is there to have anything, to do anything, to be anything apart from God? Underline, apart from God. It's vanity. Vanity. That helps us a lot if you really want to absorb it. It'd help you, you know. Your new couch is necessary. But your new couch isn't going to, a new couch is going to, if you live long enough, is going to get an old couch. Then you need a new couch, you see. Where does it end? So what profit? What profit under the sun, what profit is there on planet Earth? What is there on planet Earth that wherein we can profit? Chapter 1, verse 13. I gave my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of men to be exercised therewith. Everything is under the sun. 25, 30 times he said, it's all about planet Earth. I'm going to look at planet Earth. I'm going to not look up to God. I'm going to look at planet Earth, and I'm going to survey. I'm going to assimilate in my head and heart all the things, all the realities that you find on planet Earth. And when you're done with all, I want to know, my question is, when you've absorbed all of the realities on planet Earth, what profit have you gained? When you're all done, when you're all finished, what have you really gained? Nothing. Vanity. Apart from God. So, chapter 2, verse 3. I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainted mine heart with wisdom, to lay hold on folly till I might see what was the good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life, under the sun, under heaven, on planet Earth. Chapter 3, verse 1. To everything there is a season and a time, to every purpose under the heaven. There's a rhyme, there's an adding and a subtracting, there's a coming and going, there's a living and dying on planet Earth. Under heaven, it all takes place on planet Earth. So as we're reading, chapter 8, verse 16, as you're looking, you keep catching it over and over, so we just know where we're going and what you can expect, and rightly so, wonderful, wonderful exercise experience. Chapter 8, if I may, verse 14. There is a vanity which is done upon the earth, that there be just men unto whom it happeneth, according to the work of the wicked befalls their lot, happeneth. According to the work of the wicked, again there be wicked men to whom it happeneth, according to their work befalling them. Wicked man to whom it happeneth, according to the work of the righteous. I said that this also is vanity, vanity, vanity. One guy lives, the bad guy lives long, and the right guy dies early, and vanity. If that's all there is, if you're looking at life and trying to evaluate life, verse 16. When I applied mine heart to know wisdom, to see the business that is done upon the earth, for also there is that neither day nor night seeth sleep with his eyes. Over and over again, we're going to look and look and seek out. We're going to try to figure out what on earth and how to handle it, how to possess it, how to live with it. Chapter 11, verse 2. Give a portion to seven, also to eight, for thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. You have no idea. You do the best you can with people, persons, kindness, but you have no idea. You have no idea. Evil is evil. Men are men. Humans are humans. You can count on it. Wow. Wow. Now, if you would, and that which we can see, understand on planet Earth, and we're looking and we want to see it, we want to understand it, we want to absorb it. So now, with that in mind, James chapter 2 for a moment. James chapter 2. I just want to add a word that will help us. Remember now, apart from God, and if you really are going to be realistic, being alive on planet Earth is a tragedy. And the only way you can handle it is, and that's why people can't be objective and realistic. How can you really be when you really, really see things as they are and where they've come from and where they go? This, man, what is it? You brushed your teeth, good? Brush your teeth. And all the bacteria, right? Bacteria, busy, busy, busy bacteria, right? And you brushed them, told them all go away, right? Gargle with Listerine for 30 seconds, 60 seconds, you know, and kill the bacteria, okay? You have to live with a new gas, you have to keep spraying Listerine. Because all the bacteria is what? Right? And just killed it. And so why brush your teeth? I mean, why gargle? Why do it? What's the sense? Over and over and over again. You get out of bed and then you have to what? Don't you have to go back to bed? You have to go back to bed, right? You get up and go to work and come home. I'm waiting for the weekend. What are you waiting for the weekend? Because you get a relief before you go back to work on Monday. And you, a routine. That's what it's all about. So, thus, ephemeral, I should say. And the daily, lasting one day at a time, ephemeral, short-lived. Now, James chapter 2, if I may, verse 15, I got to quit that. Sorry, wandered. If a brother or sister, 2:15, be naked and destitute of daily food, one day at a time, ephemeral, one day at a time, daily food. We're trying to go on a daily basis. Lucifer fell, Adam fell, humanity fell. It's very transitory. It cannot endure. Anything fallen is temporary. It needs to be fixed. It's only for a day at a time. So, it can't last. It's temporary. Daily. One day at a time. That's all it is. Apart from God. One day at a time.